Welcome to Envision More. Here, we dig deep into the insights of first-generation wealth builders, unearthing stories of passion, resilience, and relentless vision. Your host is Wayne Wagner Jr., founder of Visionary Wealth Management. So sit back and dig in. It's time to envision more.
Hey, it's Wayne Wagner from Visionary Wealth Management. Welcome to the Envision More podcast. Today, I am joined by two amazing friends, one I've known for over a decade, one I've known for going on 30 years. Trent Booth is my professional coach and coach to my team and a number of other friends and near family members of mine. But Trent runs Veritas Leadership Group and then a longtime early mentor of mine, Ward Cleaver IV. That's not Ward Cleaver IV. We'll get that out of the way right up front. It's Ward Cleaver IV. And yes, there is Ward Cleaver the fifth. And so, but Chip does not have Ward Cleaver the sixth, at least not yet. So it's potentially on deck one of these days. But Ward is and I have known each other for going on 30 years at this stage. Ward was one of my first mentors in the financial planning industry. And he walked me through some of my earliest, really, like when you go into your first meeting and you just get absolutely punched in the face in sales and you come out of that, Ward was the guy who was in that meeting with me and who literally wiped my tears and dusted off my face and told me to, you know, smack me on the proverbial hiney and told me to get back in there and keep swinging. So it's been a great long journey for Ward and I. So thank you both for being here. Ward in particular, we're here to talk about your journey today. Why don't you kick us off here and like, how did you get started and where are you now?
How long do we have?
All the time you need, brother.
Well, I was blessed to be raised by two wonderful parents who loved me and still love me and provide appropriate guidance and correction and encourage me in my interests and gifts and talents. And so if we're talking about professionally, my father opened up a Janney Montgomery Scott brokerage account when I was 7 years old for me. Our broker was Morty Colson out of Philadelphia. He was my grandmother's broker. And so we opened up a brokerage account for me when I was 7 years old. I did research as a seven-year-old and bought my first stock at age seven. American Cyanamid was a chemical company. And if you will, the love affair was on. So I've just always been very, very interested in financial things. And it's fascinating to me how God kind of designs things. But if you push shift four, as in Ward Cleaver the fourth, if you push shift four on your keyboard, you'll notice a dollar sign comes up. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but it's not lost on me. So I was an entrepreneur as a young person growing up I won't say by mistake, because I believe everything is by design, but my father, again, right about the time I was 7 years old, bought me a push lawnmower and told me that I had to cut the grass at our place down in Ocean City, New Jersey every week because he was working and he wasn't going to cut the grass after working all week. So he bought me a lawnmower and said, I expect the lawn to be cut by the time I get down here Friday evening. And while you're at it, I need you to do the lady next door, her lawn, Mrs. Brandis. So she was widowed with two daughters, including her daughter, Anne, with special needs, who lived with her. And so my dad said, I need you to cut her grass as well. And I just felt like this whole arrangement was getting worse and worse and worse the longer he spoke. And he said, when you are done cutting her grass, I need you to knock on her door. She'll come out and inspect your work. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, you know, right? I mean, even as a seven-year-old, I knew free meant that you didn't get to inspect the work. It was free, for crying out loud, right? So anyway, the very first week I cut our grass, and then I went over and I cut her grass, and then I went up to her front door and I knocked on the porch and knocked on the porch door. And I said, Mrs. Brandis, I'm done cutting your lawn. And my dad said I had to come and let you know I was finished. I didn't talk about like, and so that you could come inspect my work. But surely she did. I think there must have been a little coordination on the front end between Mrs. Brandis and my father. So she came out and she walked around the yard a little bit and kind of looked at some things. And then she came back to the front porch where I was. She said, "You stay right here." And she went inside. And a moment and a half later, she came back out and gave me, I forget at the time, $5. And not being the sharpest knife in the drawer, but even with a little bit of heat, I can get through butter. I quickly realized, and I said, "Do you need your lawn cut again tomorrow?" Right. So that was my my beginning of the entrepreneurial situation. And by the time I was going off to college, and this is now going to be probably over 40 years ago, let's call it 40 years ago, 38, 40 years ago, I was making about $12,000 a summer cutting grass. And all I had was a push mower, a weed whacker, and just a 3x3 block area. And so I had to take a pretty significant pay cut to get my first real job. So I can pause there or I can continue if you'd like.
Well, you tripped into financial planning at some point, or you jumped in at it, or you aimed at it or something. And you and I ended up with a guy at Diamond State Financial Group who mentored both of us for a season.
Well, prior to that, my father, again, who is one of my own mentors, got me a summer job with a gentleman by the name of Foster Freeze, who at the time had founded the Brandywine Funds in Greenville, Delaware. And my dad was lobbying to get me a summer job as an intern. Foster had never had an intern, and so he was not favorably inclined, but he called my dad back after thinking about it and praying about it for a little while and said, "I don't even know how much to pay him." And my dad very generously said, "Don't pay him anything. Just let him be around you," right?
Just don't inspect the work too much.
Yeah. So just for what it's worth, I don't have my father as my agent because he doesn't negotiate very good deals. But anyway, I'm obviously just kidding about that. But I wound up working for Foster that summer. I drove his car while he sat in the back and made phone calls, which again, 30 plus years ago, he was one of the very first people to have a quote cell phone. Yeah. I painted the dock on his new house in Stone Harbor. I helped him do research and different things. This was a fascinating experience. And that really, again, just fanned the flames while I was double majoring in finance and marketing at the University of Delaware. So fast forward, when I was graduating, I distinctly remember living in the Christiana Towers and having no fewer than 30 letters from companies I had interviewed with saying, "Thank you for the interview. We'll keep your resume on file." So apparently I didn't interview well or didn't have a strong value proposition at that time, whatever. And so a gentleman who Wayne just mentioned, Ray Bree, so he was actually the vice president in charge of recruiting and training at another local firm, Wilmington Financial Group, founded by Bill Topkus. And so Ray called me one day and he said, "Hey, I just wanted to let you know that I have left Wilmington Financial Group." And of course, I didn't let him finish. And I said, "Ray," I said, "I've turned down all these other job offers because I was preparing to accept the offer that you were going to extend to me." And he said, "Well, wait, you didn't let me finish." He said, "I've started my own firm and I would like for you to come with me." So I said, "Okay, well, how many people are in this new firm?" And he's like, "Two, it'll be you and me." And so I was basically the first person that he hired at Diamond State Financial Group and worked there for 10 and a half years, learned a lot of important things, some things that I still use to this day, and some other things that I promised myself I would never use again.
A couple and, of things I used to forget.
Yeah, Wayne can speak to some of those things. But so in December of 99, December 6th to be exact, less than a week ago, less than a week from now, 24 years ago, I left that firm and founded my own firm, Covenant Wealth Strategies. And so we're now a team of 14, managing $400 million as of this morning. And I believe the Lord's called us and given us a vision to be a team of 20 to 25, managing over $1 billion. So we're just seeking Him for how He's going to cause that to happen. So it's one of those things where I felt like that was a vision that was given to me a number of years ago, and I did the math, and I'm like, well, we just have to do 20% per year compounded growth, which is what we've been doing for like the past 20 years, so we'll just keep doing what we're doing. And then we hit 2022 with the markets down and some other things, and we haven't been growing at a 20% compounded. And interestingly, I've been encouraged by a number of people who I respect and care for, and they're saying, hey, this goal is becoming a bit, you know, unreasonable. I don't see any practical way that we're going to be able to achieve this. And it's fascinating because I, while agreeing with them, if you will, in the practical aspect of things, I think that's exactly when God shows up, is when there's no practical earthly way that you could do it on your own. If it's going to happen, it's going to be him that does it, and then he'll get all the glory, and we won't be able to say, oh, sure, we just do what we've been doing for 20 years. We just grow 20% per year compounded like we've been doing. So at this point, and I'm just putting it out there, right? I mean, if he wants to do it, he's going to figure out a way to do it. But basically, we're going to go from 400 million to a billion in just over 3 years. So now, that was the original plan, was the end of 26, which at this point, okay, is over 3 years. So we're going to have, we're going to get interesting. We're going to see how he's going to do this.
Well, and sometimes when you put a time frame on things, God kind of laughs at the time frame, maybe not the plan, but the time frame. I was going to say, if you're just shooting for a billion, I mean, Charlie Munger just died at age 99. So, I mean, you and I have got plenty of time to get there.
Well, I was going to say, check the sofa cushions around Charlie Munger's house. That'll help us get there a little quicker, right?
That's right. Yep. So.
Yeah, well, just for what it's worth, the December 26th timeline, if you will, wasn't something that I came up with. I think that's something that the Lord came up with. So that's kind of like, you know, when we say, it's going to be interesting to see how he does it, because at this point, my ability to do it has clearly been diminished to about nothing. So it's going to be him if it happens. We'll see.
I don't know what Foster's doing these days. He might be ready to retire and turn his money over to somebody.
Yeah, Foster graduated to glory about a year ago. So, okay. Yeah, okay. But great man, great man.
Ward, I'm curious, and thanks for allowing me to be here today. Yeah. Anytime Wayne's like, I'm going to be talking to my mentors, I'm like, could I please be a fly on the wall for those conversations? Now, especially when I can meet what I would call a master mentor, because you've mentored many over the years. I'm curious what some of those initial like nugget learnings that you gleaned when you were first mentoring, whether it would be your first, second, or third mentor professionally, what were some of the lessons that you were learning early?
So Trent, just to clarify, this is from people who've mentored me, or this was me per se pouring into others?
I would say yes. I would love for you to start with what you learned from others going, and then maybe even a better question. I like the way you're framing it. What lessons did you glean from those initial mentors that you're still using today to mentor others?
So great questions. And I appreciate again the opportunity to share. I'm a big fan of what we call CIP, continuous improvement process. So just always looking to improve, to learn, to grow personally, professionally, spiritually. And so one question might be, you know, Ward, who are your mentors or who have been your mentors over the years? And I would say that my number one mentor has been my Heavenly Father. And I'm a person of faith. I have a one-on-one relationship, if you will, with my Heavenly Father, and definitely spend a lot of time in communication just in terms of praying, seeking, discerning, that sort of thing. I'm blessed. My parents, again, made sacrifices when I was in sixth grade. So sixth through 12th grade, I attended a Christian school, got a really solid knowledge of God's word. And so there's a lot that's come from there. So I would say that's my number one primary mentor. And then from an earthly perspective, my earthly father has been a tremendous mentor. He's been a leader in business, you know, regionally and nationally during his career over decades, has spoken literally in front of thousands of his peers as a keynote speaker. My father-in-law is an ordained pastor, and he has been a mentor of mine and someone who I've respected tremendously in terms of spiritual growth and development. My wife is a mentor. She's also an ordained pastor, but she's someone who is tremendous wisdom and someone who loves me deeply and blesses me with her advice and encouragement. And these are all role models as well. So I would say those are some of my primary mentors. And then just over the years, and Trent, I've done a little background study on yourself as well. So I understand that you share in some of these things, but you didn't specifically reference in any of the materials that I did study. You mentioned Jim Rohn a number of times.
Correct, yeah.
Zig Ziglar is I'm a big fan of Zig Ziglar, and I love, you know, one of his things is that you can have anything in life you want as long as you help enough other people get what they want first, right?
Sure.
And so those are, per se, those are some of the people who have influenced me, and we can talk about, per se, some early learnings or learnings along the way. And then just in terms of people that I've been blessed to be able to pour into, it might be a better idea to interview them because maybe they have a different perspective about any wisdom that I have or maybe have not been able to share effectively. But just, you know, being a person of integrity, you have one reputation and you own it, and you can trash it or you can build it. And it takes, you know, one oops to eliminate 10 attaboys, right? So so the importance of doing the right thing. And to be clear, I don't think perfection is possible this side of heaven, but excellence is something that we're all called to, being the most excellent version of ourselves and developing all of that God-given potential. One of the things that Wayne had asked me about was this topic of stewardship. And stewardship is a biblical principle. And stewardship often is referred to financial things, which we as financial advisors are certainly stewards of what's been entrusted to us by the Lord through our clients, whether they acknowledge him or not. But stewardship is also a function of opportunities. It's a function of gifts and talents. And so I think to become the best possible version of oneself means to perpetually seek and pray and discern, what are my gift sets? What are my talents? What new things does the Lord want to do in my life? And then identifying resources and doing everything to leverage those, that's a form of stewardship in terms of leveraging and engaging and utilizing to the best of our abilities the gifts and talents that the Lord's, per se, designed and instilled within each of us. So those are a few learnings, Trent. I don't know if I've answered your question. Maybe I've over-answered it, but
no, I appreciate that. In fact, I might even frame in when you say constant, never-ending improvement. I'm referring to CIP, constant improvement process. I think one of our resources is our intellect and our ability to think, and that would be one of the ways I think that you've also been a good steward is that you're carrying that over from not just financial resources, but also if I've been given a beautiful mind, my job is to keep feeding that mind and keep green and growing as well. So I'll volley back over to Wayne, because I'm sure he's got some early learnings from you, having been one of those people that you've mentored over the years.
Well, I think so Ward taught me so much early on. It was the everything from, Wayne, you just got to make it 3 years. So the first 3 years are going to be the hardest 3 years of your life. But then you're going to start to get things figured out. So I spent 4.5 years at that same firm. I left and it took me another 7 years to get to zero. So it took, I'm not a sharp knife. I'm not a bright bulb. So 3 years took me. And really what happened was I spent 4.5 years on a broken business model. Ward was instrumental in rescuing me from that. I was ready to go back to landscaping, which I had done in high school and college as well. And Ward called me and said, look, we need more people of faith and character in this industry, not less. And so you're just in a broken business model. Why don't you come over with me? And then Ward really just lived before me, because so in that environment, you have something called an OSJ, which is basically the branch manager. Branch manager typically charges anywhere from 10% to 40% of your top line revenue for providing those services. Ward was my branch manager for, I think, 6 or 7 years, never charged me a penny. And we kept a spreadsheet of all of the expenses, which I came over and the expenses were X, and somehow we ended up building more office space and hiring more people. And so the expenses became a multiple of X. But again, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. So those first few years on my own were pretty lean. But 4 years in, I owed Ward six figures. And he never charged me a penny of interest on that. And it took me another, 3 years to pay it all off. So it literally took me 11 years in this industry to get to a zero net worth. But by then, that was 2007. And by then, we had built something that was growing at 20 or 30% a year. And, we flatlined through 2008 when everybody else crashed. And then we took off. We doubled revenue from 2010 to 2014. We doubled revenue. And then here we are in 2023, and we've tripled it again from there as of this year. So, we're just exponentially more than those early years. But all of that was what I learned from Ward, was the importance of finding someone who you can trust the character, see the work ethic, see the character, but then don't be afraid to make heavy investments in them, and be patient with their process, because it'll take some of us won't be the sharpest knives in the drawer, and it'll take us a little longer to get things figured out. But once we get them figured out, then we've got something that we've got a farm that we can glean from forever. And we can continue building and multiplying from there. So Ward lived that before me. He poured into me. He created opportunities for me and blessed me in very real, tangible ways. So, and that's something that, May and I are continuing to try to do today. So when we articulate our goals for life, we want to multiply ourselves and 30 other entrepreneurs before, God willing, the side of eternity. So, and that really flows downhill from a couple of men in our lives. And Ward Keever is one of those key guys.
So Ward, I'm going to bring this to you in a moment here, because what Wayne is describing is well beyond a mentor that you had a breakfast with once in a while. Like, this is, you intervened. I would use the term sponsored, Wayne, almost wantonly. That is a long process there. Look, can we go back for a second? You see a Wayne Wagner that's about to give up. He's about to quit. Mm-hmm. And you intervene there. What was your thought process there? How were you even aware of where he was emotionally, mentally, and what goes through your mind when you entreat a guy to just keep going, to just keep trying?
Yeah. So one of the things, Trent, that when I was studying Trent Booth, quote, radically sold out for others, is a phrase that I've heard you use a couple of times. And so I would say, I was 10 and a half years in that environment. And I think, quite frankly, not flattering to our industry, but I think that our industry historically has been more about sales contests and quotas and not working in the best interest of the client, if you will. And I think
it's more transactional,
really,
right?
Yeah, I think that's what Rain's really talking about in terms of, quote, a broken business model. Mm-hmm. And, it's my first job out of school, and the sky is blue because that's what you're told it is, right? And so, I'm a rule follower. And so I was told to do certain things. And so I did those things. And it's about 10 years into my professional career, I'm in a room full of people, and I'm thinking to myself, how are they even providing for their family? Because they don't have access to the same amazing products that we have. And it occurred to me as I'm looking around the room, there's some really good quality people in here. There's some people of integrity. There's some people who are very, very successful and far more successful than I am. Maybe there are good quality products outside of this ecosystem that that I'm in, right? So anyway,
one day you look up and you realize that what you thought was the blue sky was really the bottom of the next mushroom bin over top of you.
So I actually made a decision to leave that firm after 10 years, and I interviewed with probably eight other firms, and Trent, quite frankly, found them all to be just different flavors of the same ice cream in terms of, hey, you can go on this trip and you can make this much money, and I'm like, I just want one person to talk to me about how your value proposition positions me to serve my client's best interest. And they just looked at me like I had three heads or something, right? So quite frankly, I couldn't find what I wanted. And so I set out to build it. And I took the perspective of, if I was an educated consumer in the financial services industry, which I am, how would I want to be served? Let's build the business that way. And so that's what we did. And so I was out for, Wayne, did you come in 20? I'm sorry, in...
I came in October 2020.
Or October 2000. October 2000.
October 2000. Sorry. Right.
So I went out December 6th of 99, right before Y2K, when planes were going to fall out of the sky and ships were going because of the whole Y2K thing.
You might as well have started on March 1st, 2008.
It was a tough season to start.
What's one more spark when you're going down in flames? But anyway, so then Wayne called me, I guess, back in maybe August or so of 20. And he's like, hey, you know, I know you're a Christian man and I'm a Christian man. And there's a lot of stuff that people are saying about you around here that I'm just really having trouble believing is true. And I said, well, you know, why don't we get together and we can chat about it? So Wayne didn't want to be seen in public with me. So he came over to my house and we had breakfast together. Right. Fair enough. But again,
we're coming out of the firm, by the way.
So that was the culture. When you say the firm, there's a reference to a book and a movie back in the day by John Grisham, The Firm. Okay. And I could tell you more about that. But anyway, so, you know, we got together, Wayne asked questions. I answered his questions and he said, that is a lot different than what we're being told. And I'm like, well, now you have both sides of the story. You can make your own, you know, determinations. And he said, well, there's one other thing, and I really hope you won't be disappointed, but he said, I'm just really struggling. I really can't, you know, handle this anymore. And I'm going to go back and work with my dad in landscaping. And that's where I said to Wayne, I said, you know, before you do that, maybe the issue is not the industry. Maybe the issue is that business model. And yes, I said the business needs more quality people, not less quality people. So why don't you give some prayer and consideration and think about joining me at Covenant? I said, you know, we're a startup. I got nothing to offer you, but, you know, right.
But I wasn't the second person. I was the third.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And it was also funny, Wayne, I don't know if you remember this, but so again, back in the day, things were a little bit different. But Wayne was on vacation out of the country. And I got notice that that LPL, our broker dealer, had approved his transferring his licenses over to LPL after the background check and everything. So I called Wayne. I left him a voicemail. And I was like, Wayne, you never told me about all this bad stuff, man. You never told me about the years you spent in jail. You never told me about the, you know, all these different things, right? And so I just absolutely laid it on thick. And then I'm like, hey, man, just kidding. LPL says you're approved, right? So then Wayne gets back on, like, I guess a weekend or something. And Monday morning at about 9:30, he shows up in my doorway. And Wayne's a big guy. He fills the entire doorway, right? He was as white as a ghost. And he walks right into my, he just stands right in my doorway. And he's like, I just got fired. Well, I figured he was giving me crap back for the voicemail that I left him or whatever, right? But then while we're standing there, Wayne's wife, May, calls him on his cell phone and says, Wayne, there's New Jersey State Troopers at our front door. They are looking for you. What is going on? Right. So this was trying to get out of the firm. I mean, and we're talking a little bit out of school right now. We're telling stories out of school that won't be part of the podcast. Right. But we were trying to escape the firm and it was a bad, bad deal. And that's part of the reason why Wayne wound up, you know, over his eyeballs or over his head, basically, was because of the decisions that were made by the leadership of that firm that I had successfully left and Wayne was trying to leave. And they really put the screws tight to him. And so, quite frankly, a whole bunch of the money right up front was legal fees trying to defend himself against accusations, false accusations that were being made. Right.
Yep.
So. Yep. You know, when I commit all the way. And so, you know, Wayne came in and in my mind, there was never a question or never a doubt. You know, Wayne had made the decision to leave and made the decision to join me at Covenant. And he fully committed to me and I fully committed to him, and we were going to sink or swim together. And that was just the nature of the decision, the nature of the relationship at that time. And I'm very, very thankful for the resources that the Lord made available through the work that I was doing that were able to help both of us stay afloat. So that's how I would describe that time of our lives.
Yeah.
Wow. I love the name Covenant. Can you unpack the name? You finally strike out on your own. You say, hey, I'm looking everywhere for something and not finding it, so I'll make one. Mm-hmm. I'll make this new thing, and you name it Covenant. Tell me the significance to that name.
Deuteronomy chapter 8 is a phenomenal passage of scripture. And I'll just pull it up here on my Bible app. But basically, the Lord is talking to the children of Israel, and he is reminding them. And it says, a call to remember and obey. Be careful to obey all the commands I'm giving you today. Then you will live and multiply, and you will enter and occupy the land that the Lord swore to give to your forefathers. And he then brings them a history. And he's like, remember how the Lord your God led you through the wilderness and humbling you and testing you to prove your character and find out whether or not you would obey his commands. And you went hungry and he fed you with manna and something that was previously unknown. And he did it to teach you that people don't live by bread alone. Rather, we live by every word that comes from the Lord. So, for all these years, your clothes didn't wear out, your feet didn't blister, da, 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 da. So the Lord provides a history of remembrance and says, obey, and all these blessings will come as a result. And I don't mean to skip over all of that, because that's also very, very important. But verse 11, beware that in your plenty, you do not forget the Lord your God and disobey his commands and regulations. For when you have become full and prosperous and built fine homes to live in, your flocks and herds have become large and your silver and gold have multiplied along with everything else, do not become proud and forget the Lord your God who rescued you out of the land of slavery. So specifically, verse 17, Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 17 says, and actually, I'm reading a New Living Translation. Let me come over here to the NIV, New International Translation. Verse 17 says, do not say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands has produced all of this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth, and in so doing confirms the covenant which he swore to your forefathers. So that's where the name Covenant Wealth Strategies comes from, is specifically Deuteronomy chapter 8, and a remembrance of God's faithfulness, and a remembrance that it's not our own intelligence, it's not our own work ethic, it's not all me, it's not all us, but rather it's the Lord who even gives you the ability, even gives you the opportunity, even gives you the abilities to produce wealth, and so doing confirms the covenant that he swore to your forefathers. So that's where Covenant Wealth Strategies comes from, Deuteronomy chapter 8.
I mean, that's beautiful. Ward, as you're sharing that, I've got my grandfather's, he was a Lutheran pastor. I've got his Bible here, and he actually has that bracketed right at verse 17, by the way, that covenant evokes, it evokes obviously a biblical ethic, right? And acknowledging the Lord, but also that promise that's there as well, which is beautiful. So Wayne, you go from like worst day ever to like your mentor sponsor saying, I got you. Mm-hmm. And then walking it out. I mean, what's that like for a guy that's about to as I said, worst day ever. Not all of us remember our best day ever. We can remember that moment when your wife calls and state troopers are outside.
Yeah, and that was a blessing, because I lived in New Jersey and the office was in Delaware, and so the boss couldn't call the home state troopers to go to my house. The state troopers in Delaware had to call the state troopers in New Jersey, and the state troopers in New Jersey were not all that excited about just showing up at some random guy's house to ask for files that were supposed to be
for no there. Good reason, right?
Which by the way, they weren't. Yeah. So that was the false allegations, right? But yeah. So that season was those early days were really challenging, because what we did was, I mean, we was literally a back of the envelope, you know, or on a back of a napkin outline of, okay, based on the business model shifts, if, you know, I've got to pick up X, Y, and Z, but I don't have to pay the boss, you know, Q, and I don't have to put up with the culture that was there, I'm free to serve my client's best interest, you know, what's the net? And the net was, well, Wayne, you'll be about $1,000 more a month better off if you generate the same amount of revenue with static expenses on the new platform. And so, but key, I wouldn't have to operate in that, I would say, polluted water. Let's say
toxic environment at the best.
Right, yeah. Sure. So that was really the goal, was to make an extra $1,000 a month. And I mean, frankly, my wife eventually got involved in Herbalife. And so, I mean, lots of people get involved in network marketing to make an extra $1,000 a month. So like I picked up and left that firm and joined Ward at Covenant. You know, it was effectively the same mindset of, you know, joining a network marketing company to sell some protein shakes and make an extra $1,000 a month. But over time, the vision grew, because one of the key things that had occurred was I really wanted to work with people in the pharmaceutical industry. I saw them, and we were coming out of a sales culture where you were really measured on how much life insurance, disability insurance, and annuities did you sell. But what I saw with people in the pharmaceutical industry was you could sell them the insurance that they needed one time, but they needed help every single year with rebalancing the 401k, with negotiating job offers to move between companies, with planning college education, with planning financial independence, with getting into more complex estate planning issues, with helping to accelerate wealth from one generation to the next. There were all these other opportunities that really were being left on the table because it was a sales environment of how much insurance have you sold. And so, you know, I really wanted to. Now, the problem was I came over to join Ward and I had exactly 3 clients in the pharmaceutical industry. Right. So it wasn't like I was bringing 150 households with me. I had 3. So I would go see at least one of them a week and try to get referrals into other people in the pharmaceutical industry. And then I would cold call into AstraZeneca, you know, as much and as frequently as often. But there were a lot of days where Ward be kind of looking at me and it's 2:00 and I'm going home. I'm like, well, I don't have anybody in the pharmaceutical industry to talk to. I'm going home. And Ward's like, to his enormous, this is Ward's just testament to Ward's generous spirit. He never took me aside and said, Wagner, you owe me 6 figures on the spreadsheet.
Maybe don't cut out at 2:00.
There's a whole phone book full of people that you can call. Like, why don't you go call, I don't know, 200 of them and try to get an appointment, no matter what industry they're in, instead of going home at 2:00 in the afternoon because you don't have anybody in the pharmaceutical industry to call. And so those early days, you know, gave way to later days where, and up to today where, you know, by God's grace, we have, as much or more business than we can handle. And, you know, Ward's team has gone to 14 people. My team's at 7. And, you know, we're just continuing to accelerate and grow and add people and serve our clients and it's our best interest. So.
There was one day that I was going to ask him if he could cut the grass for me, because I figured he had a background in landscaping.
Got some time in his hands, apparently. So
but when I got to his office, he had already left for the day.
I'm not going to charge you interest, but you can at least cut the grass.
I love it. I love it.
Good stuff. So, Ward, what have been a couple of areas? I mean, when I came over to you moved from to LPL, and it was going to be you and Susie on Reed's Way in Newcastle in, you know, month-to-month office space. It was just going to be you and Susie forever. And, you know, we're talking about Susie Bartlett, who was a longtime personal assistant and just God sent to Ward in those early days. She served that business so well for so many years. But over time, and it wasn't just me joining, because I think there was a little bit of a thought I would be your junior guy. And then, like, I just wanted to work with people in the pharma industry. I didn't want your $20,000 accounts. At some point, your mindset has shifted and evolved over time. What did that look like and what prompted that?
Yeah, that's a great question, Wayne. And I think you're spot on in terms of the initial motivation was to get out. The initial motivation was I was so uncomfortable that I would do just about anything to get out. And in fact, it's fascinating, a story from my very first week at Covenant. So the Monday after us, so Monday, December 6th, I started Covenant, and Monday, December 13th, I'm sitting there at home having breakfast. And my wife, Debbie, said to me, "What are you doing?" And I looked at her like I'm thinking this is a trick question or something like that. I said, "I'm having breakfast. I'm not sure I understand your question." She said, "It's Monday. You never eat breakfast on Mondays." And so just in terms of like how, if you will, sick I was at that point in time, I was so sick physically to my stomach on Monday mornings that I didn't even eat breakfast. And I didn't even know that I wasn't eating breakfast. And my wife is the one who pointed out that my very first Monday of being out from under that, I was eating breakfast, and she was surprised and called me out on it. So my initial motivation was really to get out. That's the whole purpose. There was no thought beyond that. That was the end game. Just get out and be in a situation where I could do what I love: money, financial planning, serving people, helping them to make good financial decisions, that sort of thing. That was the objective. And over time, it has really changed. We went from that to, hiring more people because I needed more help. And so I do enjoy what I do. So I do enjoy work. So I do work a lot. And it's typical for me to work 60 or 70 hours a week just because I enjoy it and because there's so much to do and there's so many people to help. And if you love what you do and they pay you for it, why would you stop anyway? Right. So that's kind of my perspective on that.
You almost sound like Ed Milet. Ed Milet says that I work 3 days for every one of your one. Because you get up and you get to work 8 hours. I get up and I work the first 6 hours, the second 6 hours, and the third 6 hours. And I got 3 days work done. And I'm always going to beat you because I'm working long more days than you.
Yeah. I mean, for me at this point, I'm certainly eating better, which might show versus 24 years ago. But, Mondays and Tuesdays, I'll commonly work a 12 or 14 hour day Monday and Tuesday. So by Tuesday, I've got 25 to 30 hours already, booked, kind of thing. So there's not going to be too many people that are going to outwork me, and that's fine. I don't mind that. I don't hold myself out as a great example of quote unquote work-life balance. It's never been a thing for me. I do what I love, and I'm blessed that I'm able to do it a lot. But so I hired people to help because there are still only so many hours, but I hired people to help, and we had some great people that we hired along the way. And then Wayne joined. And what became apparent was over time, and I don't know that it was so much on purpose as I was doing it, but now as I look back and I reflect, at Covenant, we're very fortunate. We've built a multi-generational firm. So I'll be 57 in February. Chris and Randy both just turned 40. Bill's 33. Dan's 27. And we just extended 3 offers, one of which was accepted yesterday, to young men who are graduating from college. So we are, you would look at it and say, well, Ward, yeah, you're not going to be hiring too many peers of yours. That's kind of how it works. You got to hire younger people, right?
Yeah.
But it kind of built into that, we've developed a multi-generational firm, which means that we can serve clients up and down the scale of financial well-being, if you will. I've worked with a couple of coaches over the years, and they've always said, Ward, you need to have account minimums. And I just pray about it. And my perspective is, I just seriously don't think Jesus would have an account minimum. So we don't have account minimums, but I'm not in a situation that I can work with everybody.
Sure.
So here's an opportunity to hire and train and develop the next generation, if you will, and if you will, mentor them or that sort of thing, and put them in a far better environment than I was raised in.
Yeah, about it. Yeah.
And train up the next generation of advisors. And now it's kind of funny, Trent, I get more and more people asking me, Ward, when are you going to retire? And I don't understand why they're asking me this question, right?
Like, it seems mean-spirited.
It has not occurred to me. I've had a couple of people recently ask me how the grandkids are, and I literally turn around because I swear they got to be talking to somebody behind me, because it hasn't yet occurred to me that I have grandkids or that I'm like a grandfather. That just is ridiculous. But anyway, So, you know, then now we're starting to think a little bit about legacy. We're starting to think about, you know, we've been thinking about this, but it's taking up much more headspace, if you will, is having something that outlasts. And I think, you know, having a company with a name such as Visionary or a name such as Covenant Wealth Management, it's not like it's Kiever and Associates and Kiever retires and that's kind of the end of it, right?
Yep.
So that's something, again, I think I look back and you pray about things and you do your best to make good decisions. And I look back at when I was making those decisions, and it's kind of like I was not educated or informed enough to make the decision based on having understanding. So I made the decision based on what I believe the Lord was directing. And this is one of those decisions. We set up Covenant Wealth Strategies. This is a brand that absolutely can endure and far outlive or surpass, you know, my life expectancy or my career tenure, that sort of thing. So, yeah, so we've built an organization now by God's grace that, you know, we serve several hundred households. We are, I like to say that I am blessed. I get to do meaningful work for people I care about, with people that I care about. So we're not a public utility. We don't have to take everybody.
Sure. You know,
clients come in, they're interviewing us, which they should be, and we're interviewing them, whether they realize it or not, right? So we get to pick our clients, and that's a really special thing about this industry. And so we are blessed to be able to create meaningful employment for individuals and their families who are associated with Covenant, right? So it's myself and 13 individuals and each of our respective families who are blessed to be able to play a role in doing meaningful work for people we care about, with people we care about. Isn't that great, right? Then we're bringing not a broken business model, but we're bringing a true, you can have anything in life you want as long as you help enough other people get what they want first, business model. And we are serving people without respect to their economic station in life. I'm not saying, hey, you don't have $1 million. I can't work with you because you're not, you know, whatever. And so if somebody is a less complicated situation, we can introduce them to one of our younger advisors and know that that younger advisor is not out there on an island by themselves, but has all the resources of my, you know, 34 years of professional experience almost 50 years, if you count my first stock at age 7, right? And everybody in the office is on a course of professional development. So, if you will, even the support staff are working on, you know, being securities licensed. And so if what we do for a living is wealth management, financial planning, investment planning, everybody in the office should be competent to be able to assist or at least know the direction that somebody needs to be pointed in when they're calling in. So CIP, back to CIP, continuous improvement process. Everybody professionally in our firm is on a course of professional study. They make fun of me, Trent, because I have more letters after my name than in my name. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for you to have a two-sided business card where it wraps around onto the back.
Just
the letter. The letters.
The letters. Oh, yeah.
We do have the two-sided. Oh, I don't even have one. I just gave my last one out yesterday.
It's a good sign.
Yeah. So what we do is I print on both sides. It's just not the letters that go around to the back.
Gotcha. Yeah. I was going to say the other thing you could do is on the back of it, put what each of the designations is. Explain a little bit about
definition. CHFC.
Yeah. Or put a QR code on the back of it that takes you to a website that explains it.
Or if we could go back to,
but we have a QR code on our business cards now.
Okay. Yeah, I love it. Look at you. I mean, I love multi-generational business. That is tremendous. That generational diversity, I would imagine, also helps to keep that you on the young side as you're maturing, if you will, that it keeps you kind of green and growing yourself as well. There's how to manage a 22-year-old today is different than 20 years ago, as I know you're well aware. One of the things I'm hoping that you're counting in terms of that legacy, Ward, is the people that you've invested into, sponsored, and mentored are carrying that tradition on. And you may not even be aware of all the individual stories, because as much as there are people that Wayne works with, there are people that he has no business with at all, but invests into, pours into, has a breakfast with, just gets into the soil of their lives, if you will. So I want to put Wayne a little bit on the hot seat there to kind of unpack a little bit about what he saw you do and how he's doing that, maybe in some specific examples. It could be a little uncomfortable when we're talking about how great a mentor we are. But the reality is, Ward, I have witnessed Wayne be wildly sold out for others' success as well. And that's one area where we're certainly aligned. And I hope that you are feeling the Lord's pleasure as you witness what else he's doing in the world there with even people that are very close to me and various businesses. And again, not businesses, but it's always a beautiful thing, Ward, when the lines between ministry and vocation blur. And they seem super blurry over there at Covenant Wealth Strategies. So, Wayne, I'll put you on a hot seat a little bit. Some of your favorite examples where you've been mentoring or sponsoring somebody, and Ward comes to mind, or maybe a cliche that he used to say that, you know, you find yourself saying these days.
Well, I think there's times, even in this past year, I've had two times with my own son, who's we spent $750,000 to build an Annie Ann Cinnabon on the Ocean City Boardwalk. And as a 19-year-old, we installed Bryce, who's worked with us for 5 years in other businesses, but we installed him as a general manager there. And he's going to run a staff of 35 people and expect to do close to $750,000 in sales in 5 months. And the week before we opened, I held him while he just cried on my shoulder. But, you know, Dad, I'm suffering from imposter syndrome. I'm going to fail. This isn't going to work. And I remembered the time, but I had been on a marketing team at AstraZeneca. I gave us an appointment. I took my mentor Ward with me. I'd been a financial advisor for, I think, 5.5 weeks or something. And we get in there and I'm trying to do a fact finder. I'm not quite reading my script anymore, but I'm not far off of it. I'm trying to ask questions and just not giving me clear information. Hey, how much do you have in your 401k? Well, let's just say $100,000. What's your house worth? Let's just say $100,000. You know, well, how much debt do you have? Let's just say $100,000. Yeah. He's just being, you know, he's just not giving anyway. So I try multiple times to hand it off to Ward. Ward, maybe you've got some advice to you. And Ward has already read this situation. This guy doesn't want us there. He did this as a favor to Wayne. You know, he's going to let Wayne do his little practice shtick. He's not going to give us, there's nothing. He's not going to do business with this, with us. You know, Ward probably read that within 37 seconds of walking into the room. And Ward just sits there and lets me fail. I mean, my lower lip is quivering. My eyes are welling up. I'm a failure. This is the end of my sales career.
The worst.
And we literally go to stand up and got this smug look on his face that I just want to punch him. And we stand up. And as we stand up, Ward's face and mind kind of pass. And he just whispers, just hold it together. And we walk out the door, you know, walking behind us. You know, smugly walking us to the door. Yeah. He's never going to have to see Wayne Wagner or Ward Kiever again. And we get outside and Ward says, okay, let it go. And I just burst out crying. I have tears running down my face. I'm like, yeah, I mean, the whole nine. And and Ward just calmly says, Ward or Wayne, that guy was a jerk. We can't help jerks and we don't work with jerks. There are 6 billion people on the planet. You need to find a few hundred over the course of your career to have a successful career in this business. That guy is not one of them. Dust your feet off, pick yourself up, shed a tear or two, and come back to work tomorrow because we got work to do. And so, you know, the couple of episodes like that, where you've got somebody with you. And I mean, there was a moment in the meeting where I hate Ward, right? Where I like, you are letting me fall straight on my face. Like I am getting drug along behind this car on my face. And, you know, And I am just crashing and burning moment by moment here. And then Ward had already saw, A, this guy's never going to be a client of ours. We can't help him. One of the most crucial things you can ever learn in sales, that it is absolutely okay to get hit squarely between in the face with a 2x4 because it doesn't kill you. And the next day is a new day and you're going to talk to somebody else and you already got one of your no's out of the way and you're that much closer to your next yes. And the sooner and the faster anybody in a sales type role can learn that and learn that the faster their armor grows, the faster their bulletproof skin, comes into play. And Ward was there for me, helping me develop those early layers of thickening of the skin. So maybe stepped in and not let me take quite so many stripes, but in the end, it was the right thing to do then. And it was the right thing to do for my son this summer.
Sure.
Right. We're always going to struggle with imposter syndrome. Bryce is off doing another big thing, another big swing and another big project right now. And within the last 2 weeks, he and I had another conversation almost exactly like that, where it was, I just feel like I'm imposter syndrome. I don't feel like I'm up to the task. And what I said to Bryce is, listen, 80 to 90% of the people in the world get up and go to a job where there's nothing new that they're going to do today than they did yesterday. They get up and go to a job that nothing scares them. And that's not the life we're called to, because if we are truly stewarding this life that we're given, then every single day we should get up and be staring over the edge of some cliff that should at least give us a little anxiety or a little fear, because that means we're growing. It means we're becoming. And if success is something you become success is something you attract by the person you become, Jim Rohn, then becoming is painful, right? You go to the gym, it hurts. I mean, you guys go to the gym. I don't go to the gym, but you guys go to the gym. I hear that it hurts. I say that tongue in cheek, but
they do say that adversity forges character, and Ward, you're watching your young protege get absolutely flamed, and you've seen this movie before, so you know how it's going to end within the first few seconds, and you let him take the hits. Now, is this something that would be a principle? I mean, what a cool milestone, but is this a mindset for you where, all right, we're going to take him, he's going to fly or he's going to flop it, he'll do it on his own steam, and then I'll help reset after that. So as much as he let you kind of twist in the wind and burn for a while, he didn't let that go beyond the appointment, which is an interesting thought Ward. Right. Yeah. Is this something that was intentional on your part? Hey, I'll go along with him, but I'm not helping him. Or is this something that kind of in real time, you just find yourself knowing the right thing to do?
Well, I actually called in advance of that meeting and I was like, no, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Now, I think if there's a principle, Trent, to be had, the principle is how people treat you ideally has nothing to do with how you treat them. Mm. And so the fact that this gentleman was being unkind to us and specifically to Wayne doesn't justify us doing the same to him.
Sure.
Right. And so it was less about leaving Wayne out there twisting in the wind, and it was more about not being a jerk back to the guy, right? Sure. Okay. So, the fact that Wayne vividly remembers that demonstrates that it was formative in his own career, okay? I like to say, people say, Ward, describe your ideal client. And they're thinking, I want to say, well, it's got this much net worth and this much income and this financial
circumstance,
whatever. Yeah. I'm like, my ideal client has three very specific traits. Hmm. Number one, they genuinely want our advice. Number two, they gladly pay for our advice. And number three, they willingly follow our advice, because if all three of those things are not true, then nothing else I could tell you about a character trait about that ideal client even matters, right? So at this point in my own career, I'm thankful. Again, I've got 7 advanced industry designations, or I've got honors degrees in finance. I've got a half a dozen securities licenses. I don't need the practice with somebody who doesn't value the advice that I'm going to give. And so this gentleman that we were in the office with, clearly, you know, as Wayne said, merely agreed to the appointment because he figured Wayne got some credit or something for booking an appointment, but had no real interest in the work that we did, had no real interest in our value proposition, if you will. And so Wayne was perceiving him as being a jerk, and I was just perceiving him as somebody that doesn't want our advice. And so he's just kind of going through the motions because he thinks he's helping Wayne. Wayne thinks he's being a jerk because he's basically, you know, doing this in front of, you know, Wayne's mentor, whatever you want to call it, right? So, you know, my perspective was I'm watching it unfold. It's very clear to me, as Wayne said at the very outset, this is not a legitimate meeting. This is not somebody who really wants our advice. And so I'm going to go ahead and let Wayne practice his thing. And for me, it's not about, hey, letting you twist in the wind. It's about letting you, you know, this is effectively a dress rehearsal. This is not the actual live presentation because this person's not going to be a client.
Sure.
So this is effectively a dress rehearsal. Let's see how you do. Right. Yeah, and then
this is after, sparring match. This isn't fight night.
Yeah. After the event's over, then we'll take inventory and we'll discuss what opportunities are there for improvement. And quite frankly, one of the opportunities for improvement might have been to identify a little bit earlier before you got so bloodied, you know, might have been to identify a little bit earlier that this was not a legitimate, you know, potential client candidate.
Maybe a prospect or a suspect. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and to say, oh, okay, well, it seems to me that this is actually not something that you're genuinely interested in at this time. So respectfully, why don't we give you some time back in your day and we'll wrap up. And that's how I would leave that. Right. So just being kind to people. I mean, life is too short and the Delaware Valley is too small to burn bridges and reflect antagonism back to people. And quite frankly, if you treat people with kindness, regardless of how they treat you, you know, people might actually, he might remember that meeting too. And he might remember, boy, I was really a jerk to Wayne. But you know what? They did not fight back. You know, they did not reflect back my jerkiness. And I always remembered them about them. And you know what? I am now facing a career transition. And the people who came and demonstrated that they had a sincere interest and a genuine care and concern for me, even though I treated them poorly at that time, if I can get over myself, they might be some of the very first people I'm going to call when, in fact, I need that advice.
Is now when you tell me that you've been working with for the last 23 years?
He's been a client for 23 and a half years, Wayne.
You know, it just reminds me of the parable of the sower and the seed. And it was always fascinating to me that the sower was not concerned about the seed that fell on the path or fell on the rocky soil. The job is to throw seed, right? My job is to throw seed and not lose sleep over the one that doesn't get it, but celebrate the one that gets it and is multiplied 10 times 10.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at that, Trent, just in terms of, you know, we deal with illness in our lives. We deal with illness of loved ones, and there are things in life that don't go the way that we would like for them to go. And you look at it and you're like, God, why are you not fixing this? You know, clearly you have the power to fix it. Why are you not fixing this? And what occurs to me is that when Jesus himself walked the earth, he literally did not fix everything. He did not heal everybody, right? Mm-hmm. He could have, but he didn't. So why would it be different now than when he was here in person, right? And so we're going to face adversity. I would remind you that a kite flies against the wind. And so we're going to face adversity and we will grow and achieve and improve and get better as we face that adversity. And we'll figure things out and we'll learn things that we didn't know before and we'll become better. And part of that might be, let's try not to do that again. Or part of it might be to figure out a technique to, you know, to convert that opportunity. So,
Ward, I want to shift gears a little bit. You have, over time, you started to use some terminology around biblically responsible investing. And I know that you are deeply involved with a national organization called Kingdom Advisors. Can you maybe talk to us around how your thinking has evolved in that those areas and the work that you're doing with Kingdom Advisors and why that's so important to both to Covenant and to you personally?
So I think an important word that you mentioned there, Wayne, and thanks for asking the question, was how my thinking has evolved. And I think it's also very important. In this particular instance, we're talking about a faith journey, and we're talking about the concept of biblically responsible investing. And I think it's very important to realize that not everybody is at the same point in their faith journey, and not everybody is at the same point on this topic of biblically responsible investing. In fact, one of the most surprising conversations that I had was with a pastor who's a client of ours, and I was conveying to him about biblically responsible investing and how excited we are to be doing this. And his point was, I don't care about that. I just want you to make me money. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You're a pastor, right? So anyway, not everybody is at the same point in their journey is what I'm saying. So where we were maybe 10 years ago.
Was that when you pulled out the questionnaire and said, so strip clubs are a yes? And pot dispensaries are a yes.
No. And again, that's where you come back. You're just like, hey, it's not my job to sit in judgment. I might ask a couple of questions that causes people to think, but I'm not certainly not in a position to be able to cast judgment on others. So probably 10 years ago, I had been invited by another gentleman in our industry who is probably in his 80s at this point. And he had for years been inviting me to a Kingdom Advisors study group. And I was like, I need one more thing to do. Like, I need a hole in the head. Thanks so much for the invitation. I respectfully pass at this time, right? And you'll notice one of the things that I will say is at this time, because it's not no, never. It's just no, not now, right? And so that's another thing in life when we're talking to people about stuff and they say, no, it's not forever. It's just not now. So I can ask them again. Right. But anyway, so he asked me and I said, not at this time. So he would ask me again. So I was actually at an LPL conference, the annual Focus educational conference up in Boston that had probably 6,000 people at that time. And I was on my way from one compliance mandated meeting to another compliance mandated meeting. And these are about as boring as watching paint dry. And I admit that my attitude was not constructive. It was not a good attitude. And I'm walking through this expo area with all of these different product sponsors and people wanting to talk to you. And I noticed an open air presentation, and there was a monitor on the wall behind the guy who was speaking, and it said LPL Kingdom Advisors Community. And I thought to myself, now what is this? And so I sat down, unfortunately, admitting now, live on air, being recorded. I never made it to that second compliance meeting. So I hope, you know, whatever. I'll probably lose all my licenses now. But anyway.
It was available online.
There you go.
So anyway, I met Don Williams and a number of people from Eventide Funds, Finney Caravilla, and some others, and learned that there was such a thing as an LPL Kingdom Advisors community. Trying to shorten up the story a little bit, probably 9 months later, due to some things that I had done, I was asked to be on the board. And about 4 months after I was asked to be on the board, I became board chairperson. And so for 4.5 years, I was board chairperson, and praise God, we grew a community from less than 250 to over 1,200 people in about 4.5 years. LPL's got over 22,000 advisors, plus maybe 8,000 home office, plus people in the advisors' offices. So there's easily 30 or 40,000 in the population. And if you said, well, even only 10 or 20%, which I think is more than that, but even if it's only 20% are people that would want to be part of a faith community, that's like 8,000 people and we're only at 1,200. So there's still a big opportunity out there, but you can only be on the board for so long. So this past year we handed off the baton, and the fellow who was vice chair, who the Lord brought to us, he switched roles. So we're passing the baton off this year. Gary Stanislavski is now vice chair, and I'm vice chair. He's chair and I'm vice chair. But anyway, Kingdom Advisors is something that's very important. It's a national, actually an international organization based out of Atlanta, Georgia. They have an annual conference in Orlando every February. This past February, there were about, I think, 2,500 people there. And the mission statement of Kingdom Advisors is to equip financial advisors to give biblically wise advice. And so I think that that's really, you know, valuable, really helpful. So then as part of that is this whole area of biblically responsible investing. And if you take a look at another parable of Jesus's, the parable of the talents, right? And the master called three servants to him and gave each of them a few talents or resources or money to invest. And the master went away and he came back and he called each of the three servants to give an account. And the first two servants gave their account. And the master said, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with the little that I've entrusted to you. Now I will entrust even more to you. Enter into the joy of your master." And so being a words of affirmation, love language, if you're familiar with that, or being a people pleaser personality, that's like the utopia for me, is hearing people say, or hearing the Lord say, "Well done, you've been faithful with what I've entrusted you. I want to entrust even more to you." And by the way, there are three biblical passages, Deuteronomy 8, Matthew 25 is the parable of the talents, and then Jeremiah 29:11 are the three biblical passages. And Wayne, when we moved into our beautiful stone barn almost 19 years ago, gave me a beautiful piece of 4x6 cherry engraved with, "I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to give you a hope and a future, to prosper you and not to harm you." So that continues to be proudly displayed over the mantle in our great room. But anyway, so biblically responsible investing is driven in part by this aspect of stewardship. "Well done, good and faithful. You've been faithful with what I've entrusted to you. I will now entrust even more to you." And I think it also comes back to, I believe it's Psalm 24:1 that says, you know, "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it," right? So everything belongs to the Lord. And so then you kind of ask yourself the question, well, how would the Lord want his wealth invested? Would he want it invested in a company that's one of the largest distributors of pornography in the country, which might be Comcast? Would he want it invested in the company that's one of the largest manufacturers of abortion-related medical instruments and pharmaceuticals in the country, which might be Johnson & Johnson? Would he want it invested in a company that manufactures products which kill their customers, which might be British Tobacco or Altria Group? You know, I don't know that, I don't think that the Lord would want his wealth invested in things that are what I would refer to as part of the kingdom of darkness, right? It says that the enemy comes, John 10:10 says that the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. But I have come that you might have life and have it abundantly. So if we're going to be investing the Lord's wealth, which has been entrusted to us by the Lord through our clients, whether or not they acknowledge him as Lord or creator, or whether or not they acknowledge him as the owner of what they're entrusting to us, right? Do we want to invest in things that promote human flourishing? "I have come that you might have life and have it abundantly." Or are we going to be called to give an account and have to come back and say, you know, "Master, I invested in these things which are part of steal, kill, and destroy. The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy." And hear the master say to us, "You wicked, evil, lazy servant, take what has been given to him and give it to the one that has 10 talents, right? And cast this wicked servant out to the darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth." So I think it's just really a function of, and please again, understand, I think everybody's at a different point in their journey. I would say that 10 years ago, I had no awareness of this. So it was clearly not something that we were doing in terms of, you know, doing biblically responsible investing. And so my comments are not intended to be judgment on anyone who is not in the same situation that I'm in or at the same point of the journey. I think my comments are intended more to maybe make people think and ask questions about their stewardship in terms of, and myself. I mean, it's a continual thing for me too. There's, you know, hey, there's, this is a big idea. There's a lot of fine tuning within this big idea. But, you know, if I look at it and say, you know, some people say, "Well, I just invest in a mutual fund. I don't even know what the mutual fund owns." Take a look at the top 10 holdings. You got a couple of those things I was just mentioning in your top 10 or top 20 holdings. If it's an S&P index fund, same thing, top 20 holdings, right? And so we have the opportunity in the position that the Lord has put us in to be able to direct capital in such a way as to help pick winners and losers. And so if a company is starved of capital, it will not be able to continue. But if a company has an abundance of capital, it will be able to grow. If I am cheering for somebody to win, the Bible says where your money is, there your heart will be also. And so where my money is invested is basically a vote of who it is that I want to win. And so where's my money invested, both personally as an individual and professionally as a steward of what's been entrusted to me by the Lord through our clients? And how do we think the Lord would want his money invested? And so we kind of take what we call avoid, embrace, engage, three-step process. Number one, avoid things that are not God-honoring. Number two, embrace things that are consistent with a biblical worldview and a theme of human flourishing. And number three, engage wherever you can to advocate a biblical worldview and encourage others to do the same. So again, a long answer. I hope I didn't over-answer your question, but that's at least a beginning on that topic.
I think that's great. That's and you and I have talked about this over the years. I know that you're further along in this journey than I am in this area. And so I was happy to get some color commentary on it in this context, so that we can share that with our listeners for sure. So I want to be cognizant of time, we're running about an hour 17 right now. So with your permission, can I ask you a final question, Ward?
Certainly.
So looking back over your journey, what's one thing you would want us to leave with on the area or issue of envisioning more?
What's one thing to leave you with on the topic of envisioning more? I think is really from a faith perspective, understanding, if you will, that God is the God of more. Toronto Airport Christian Fellowship, John and Carol Arnott, God bless him. He had a license plate on his car that said "More Lord," right? That was, and it's not from a material standpoint necessarily, but it's more of the Lord, right? When you take a look at Galatians 5 and the fruits of the Holy Spirit, love, joy, peace, faithfulness, self-control. And the Bible goes on and says, against such things, there are no laws, right? How about more of that? How about more of that in my life? How about more of that in my community? How about more of that in our world? When you take a look at all of the problems that we have going on in the world around us, clearly there's not an abundance of love, joy, peace, faithfulness, self-control, these sorts of things. So, Lord, how about more of the fruits of the Spirit? How about if you fill me with your Spirit to the point that the fruits of your Spirit are so abundant, so more in my experience that they overflow me and that I become contagious? We just had a global pandemic. How about if we have a global pandemic of the fruits of the Spirit? Wouldn't that be a much better world to live in? And where does it start? Lord, let it start with me. And I have to admit that I'm not 100, I'm not batting 1,000 on that. Okay. I tend to react to stuff. But if we could have more of the Lord in our lives, evidenced by more of the fruits of his Holy Spirit overflowing in our lives, God is the God of more. Biblical principles, sowing and reaping, Trent, you mentioned. The principles of stewardship, Matthew 25, you've been faithful with what I've entrusted to you. Now I will entrust even more to you. We tend to look to the world for wisdom, but it's Ecclesiastes, I think chapter 6, there's nothing new under the sun, right? In fact, modern portfolio theory developed in the 1950s by Harry Markowitz and a team of academics for which they won a Nobel Prize basically said diversify to manage risk. Well, that's an Ecclesiastes written how many thousand years ago that says spread your holdings across 6 or 8 different positions because you never know what harm under the sun may befall man. And they get a Nobel Prize for it. It was already there, right? So I think God is the God of more. So as we talk about envisioning more, it comes back to a comment that I made earlier in our conversation, that stewardship also has to do with becoming all that the Lord has designed or intended us to be. Realizing, quite frankly, as an ROI, return on investment, the Lord has invested, the Lord has designed us, the Lord has put within us gifts, talents, abilities, opportunities, all of these different things. And if he is a God of more, it's a function of manifesting, realizing, becoming all of that more that God has designed or intended for us to be. So I think that's how I would answer your question. And that's per se what I would leave you with as my closing remarks.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ward. Thank you for being here. Trent, do you have any closing thoughts for us?
It's just been such a gift to get to know you a little bit more, Ward, and to see your influence there in Wayne, and also to encourage both of you that you're both being faithful to continue passing along what you've been given to others. Thank you for the time today.
It's been my pleasure, Trent. It's a pleasure to meet you in person as well, and I hope that our paths will cross again soon. And Wayne, thanks for this opportunity. You know, Wayne's an author, if you don't know this. Wayne is an author, and he wrote a book. Very good book, by the way. And I really appreciated when he shared a copy of this book with me. And in the foreword, he actually mentions me as a mentor, which, Wayne, that really touched me. And I really appreciate that. So it's been a pleasure doing life together. I have tremendous respect for what you have accomplished as a young man. I know you're not as young as when we started out together almost 30 years ago.
That's great.
I have tremendous respect for what you have accomplished. I have tremendous respect for what you have done with the gifts, talents, abilities, and opportunities that the Lord has put before you, not just as a businessman, but also as a community leader. Your work with the Christian school that you supported financially and in other ways for so many years, your investment into your kids and to so many others. It's truly a blessing to see you continue to take it further down the road and succeed beyond anything that you or I could ever have imagined some almost 30 years ago. So God bless you.
Well, this is going to be one of the early episodes of the Envision More podcast. And the purpose of this podcast is to capture content to help first generation wealth building families become wealth accelerating families. And so I think this context of envisioning more and envisioning more of not just wealth, but of character and character traits, because one of the things we often say at Visionary is that it's more important what we leave in our kids than what we leave to our kids. And so I'll leave that as a last thought here. Thank you for joining us here on the Envision More podcast. And Covenant Wealth Strategies is in Wilmington, Delaware. Visionary Wealth Management is in Wilmington, Delaware. But both of us, both of these firms have clients all across the country. And so if you're looking for someone who's a little bit further along in their journey on the biblically responsible investing side, you're probably going to call Ward. And if you're in the pharmaceutical industry looking for someone to help accelerate your wealth through multiple generations, you're probably going to reach out to Visionary Wealth Management. But if you're listening to this, thank you so much for the time and investment. And thank you, Ward and Trent, for joining us today.
Thank you for listening to the Envision More podcast with Wayne Wagner Jr. of Visionary Wealth Management. We hope you were encouraged and inspired by the conversation today. If you want to dig deeper into the show notes or Wayne's work at Visionary, you can find us at envisionmore.com. That's envision with a Z. Advisory services are provided through Wealth Plan Investment Management. Wealth Plan Investment Management and Visionary Wealth Management are separate entities. The content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security. Thanks for listening.